It is the Monday version of the Bet the Board NFL podcast. We'll be joined in just a matter of seconds by Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter at that same name. And Mr. Payne, are you still trying to digest all that lovely display of football we saw yesterday throughout the course of the day?
It was a pretty interesting week. Unfortunately, a couple of games that we were on got ugly quick when you're talking about the Bears. But I think we recovered pretty well late in the day with the Saints. So a little surprising early, not so much late.
Yeah, I will say that the Eagles defensive coordinator won't be getting any holiday cards from you or I, given the way they handled that situation late against the Cardinals. But as you alluded to, nice win on the Saints to close out the day, and a pretty easy win as well with the Steelers waiting for that number to continue to climb. I was remiss, though, for those folks looking to follow Payne, you can find him on Twitter at PayneInsider.com. And Payne, as we always do, kind of in our post-mortem on Monday, I'm going to give you the chance to figure out where you want to start with a team that really surprised or disappointed, or a box score that really caught you off guard, given yesterday's results.
Well, there's a couple of them, and I think we've talked about this team, and it's the Jacksonville Jaguars. I literally am not sure how bad this team is. I was able to watch virtually that game in its entirety against Miami. And that was Miami's worst game of the season. When you actually look at things, they had negative 6 yards about 25 minutes into that game. They finally put a decent drive together before the half, and for some reason Jacksonville trailed in that game 24-6. I'm just not sure how bad the Jaguars are. It might be one of the NFL's worst teams of all time. So that's a team that was really, really surprising how poor they were. The Bears, another team. That team is just absolutely cooked. I don't know what to say about that defense. Really, really poor, poor team. A lot of quit in them, and that was what was surprising to me, a team that just basically looked like they had quit. And then the team we talked about a little earlier, the Saints, good performance. Sean Payton getting things going, getting their run game established, getting Cooks into the mix, and allowing that defense to actually have a chance. And that defense is much better when they're able to get after the quarterback and play with a lead. They have a semblance of a shutdown corner in Keenan Lewis, and they can get after the quarterback. So if they play with the lead, Rob Ryan's defense can be successful.
And you said you subjected yourself to watching nearly the entire thing of Miami-Jacksonville. I did the same with the Bears and Patriots in the first half. And while I won't defend that type of play, beating the market as we did by a point and a half in that particular spot, there were a couple instances where that game really could have gone a lot differently. The Patriots go up 10-0. The Bears on a 3rd and 18 have a chance to hold New England to a field goal. Of course, that turns into a touchdown. The Bears then answer with one of their nicer drives of the entire afternoon to cut that game to 17-7. And again, can't get off the field on 3rd and 14 from that point. That game continued to snowball. You did hit on the Saints, talking about how effective they were given their performance. A team that really surprised me after getting down 7-0 early was Kansas City. Defensively, this was a team I was real down on, thought they'd have some problems in the secondary, but scored 34 unanswered points to rout St. Louis and held the Rams pretty much in check until the final drive of the entire game when they picked up some yards in garbage time. What do we make of the Chiefs at this point? I mean, this is a team I openly admit I was real down on coming into the season, and I guess I've been a little bit shocked by how well they've played.
Yeah, we were definitely down on the Chiefs early in this season, and we're sitting on an under win total with them. And when you look at this schedule moving forward, there's not a ton of tough challenges ahead in my mind, but they seem to be coming together. Andy Reid has kind of revitalized things. Some of the newer pieces on the offense are coming together when you implement a Kelce into the mix and a Niles Davis and a nice change of pace back roll. So the offense seems to be clicking on all cylinders right now. The defense playing with the lead certainly helps. So that's really the question mark. Can the defense continue to show some signs of progression? They were struggled early in the season, and I thought when they came on in the, I guess, week 3 and 4, I thought it was because the offense was giving them a lead to play with, much easier for defenses in that role. But they've really done well the last few weeks in tight ball games. So defense is definitely progressing in the right direction for Kansas City.
Well, if Kansas City's progressing in the right direction, a team that's definitely not, let's talk. Take a minute to talk about the Atlanta Falcons. They look like world beaters the first half against the Lions playing across the pond out to that 21-0 lead. and then basically imploded in the second half, allowing the Lions to score the final 22 points of the game and come out of there with a win they didn't deserve, in my opinion. But, of course, Atlanta was able to cover as a 3.5-point dog. How do we handicap the Falcons going forward? I mean, this is a team who really seems to be lacking in identity and can't do anything exceptionally well, whether it be on the offensive or defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I think we talked about this a little bit last week, and when a team like Atlanta isn't winning games at home, isn't able to produce on the offensive side of the ball, then there's going to be really issues. We know their defense struggles a lot, but when the identity of your team is struggling, there's room for concern, and I think, you know, you have to be total sellers at this point. When you talk about an Atlanta offense scoring 0 points in the second half, that's just inexcusable. And really the way that game finished, you got to look at Matt Ryan. I mean, it really started to snowball for them when he makes probably the most ill-advised pass of the entire weekend, and you just can't have that from a leader in Matt Ryan. Now, I know Coach Smith definitely had a couple brain farts, as he usually does, but when you have a guy like Matt Ryan making passes like that, there's room for concern.
All right, well, if you're going to pick on Matt Ryan for ill-advised passes, I think you know the direction I want to go in here, and it's our beloved gangrene, losing by 20 points at home to the Bills, despite outgaining them by 32 yards. The Jets right now, 1-7, and I think not even calling them a dumpster fire does this team justice for what we've seen from Geno Smith.
Yeah, I think it's time to sell on Geno Smith. I know a lot of I know a lot of people have.
Is your stock worth anything if you're selling now, or are you already trying to dump it for pennies on the dollar?
You just got to get something in return at this point. I think, you know, a couple common baseball cards and some chewed up bubble gum might suffice at this stage. But when you talk about what he did on Thursday night in a national primetime spot on the road against New England, he really showed some signs. He was able to move around in the pocket, really used his feet, and he looked like he was progressing, and that seems to be, to me, something that's concerning. It's not translating into consistency. And when you talk about this Buffalo team, to me it wasn't a great spot for Buffalo. Now, I know we got some sharp money grabbing that three later before that game kicked off, but that's kind of been the Buffalo all season. Sharp guys really gravitate towards that team. But it was really a spot for the Jets to win. You would think they'd have some motivation when your GM and organization goes out and acquires a piece like Percy Harvin to give you a sense of hope, so to speak, at 1-6, and you just come out flat as can be, and you throw three picks. I believe it was his first six passes, so, and he's done at this point. I just don't know where you transition to, because Mike Vick clearly isn't your future. At this point, it might be time to put in Sims.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe it's time to pick that phone up and call Greg McElroy. Get him off of the SEC network out there taking reps to integrate him into the Jets offense. I mean, we talk about the Jets, and we know how poor they've been. I guess one of the other games that caught me a little bit by surprise, not necessarily by the team that covered, but by the way the football game went, Pittsburgh Steelers hang 51 on the Indianapolis Colts. We knew the Colts had been overvalued. You know, eventually we're going to come crashing back to earth. But what really jumped off the page at you from that game, seeing the Steelers go out there and win that game 51-34?
Todd Haley, baby. All is well in Pittsburgh between him and Big Ben, although I feel like that last play of the game where he tried to get him to pick up a first down and he gets absolutely crunched was kind of a sign that Todd Haley was sending to Big Ben there. But other than that, the offense was humming. I think we saw some regression. Obviously, we thought the Colts had issues to start the season on defense. They've been playing over their heads. They're playing at home. They're playing with a lead, and they're playing against some suspect offenses. So it finally came to a halt for that defense, which I think was a little smoke and mirrors. So it's kind of just the perfect storm there. And when you look up at the scoreboard at 85 points scored, it's just Roger Goodell has turned this league into a mess. So not really sure what to see. I don't like football like that. But Pittsburgh got it done, and I know a lot of people were talking about the Colts being the sharp side at three. I disagree with that just a little bit, knowing the information we get. Everyone was number-grabbing on Pittsburgh, especially late before kickoff. So I'm not really sure where that information came from, but I think Pittsburgh was the right side, obvious by the final score.
Well, I mean, you talk to some of the books, both offshore and here in town, and they said that was one of their single biggest decisions of the day. Didn't matter what the number was, the public continued to lay the price, and who could really argue, given what you'd seen from the Colts and the way they've been covering machines, the other on the flip side, Pittsburgh pretty fortunate to get through the Houston Texans on Monday night. And in the breaking news category, Payne, we get to break some news, albeit it might be irrelevant by the time this podcast airs. Michael Vick has been named the Jets' starting quarterback for this weekend's game against Kansas City in the least surprising narrative of the NFL season.
That's a positive. He might actually put himself and get himself acclimated to a little game tape and maybe try to get involved in the game plan a little bit. We know he's not big on that when he's not named the starter. So hopefully he'll be prepared a little bit this week maybe and get the Jets offense under his belt and maybe get them to progress a little bit. We're looking at a 10-point spread right now. My guess is that will come down a little bit with Vic, and it'll be interesting to see where that line closes.
I am waiting anxiously for my Steam alerts to see this number go to 9.5 for people that believe that Michael Vick can't move the needle when it comes to the NFL. Apparently, we'll have plenty of time to try and figure things out. I think of all the games, I mean, we've hit on some of the main ones, and I guess real quick, just that, you know, any takeaways from the Ravens-Bengals game? Clearly, Cincinnati finally rose to the occasion and actually looked like a competent football team for the first time in weeks.
Yeah, you got a lot of energy and effort. It's what we expected in a divisional game. Baltimore, though, we know their struggles away from home this year, and really in this current regime under Joe Flacco, it's really Flacco's dichotomy with road and home. And fortunately, Cincinnati tried giving that game away late, had some resolve, and kind of won it late in that game, despite, I thought, dominating a vast majority of the early stages of that game. So for me, Cincinnati showed that they're tough. It was a big, big win for them. Had some resolve there, but for me, it was Cincinnati in that side. We saw some number grabs again once it got to +3, just an absolutely ridiculous number from the professionals there grabbing that 3. So I think that was the right side. We talked about it on this podcast last Thursday. We thought Cincinnati was going to be the side even at Pick'em. That line goes to +3, and I will say I'm a little disappointed that I didn't grab any of that 3.
That makes two of us then for nominated for Resident Jackasses of the Year, saying we like a game at Pick. Game goes to 3 and are still sitting on the sidelines. But so is the nature of the beast in the NFL. And just to reset for folks that are listening to the Monday podcast for the first time, our preview of the Monday night game between Dallas and Washington will come up shortly. The man on the other end of the line, he of Payne Insider fame, you can follow him on Twitter at such a name, and you can see his great work, PayneInsider.com. I'm Todd Furman. Follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman and read some of my work at toddstake.com. And Payne, like we always like to do at this time of the week on Mondays, we flip to the look-ahead lines and see what one result in the NFL has done towards the upcoming week's games. And I think there's no better place to start than our Thursday night game, which we'll, of course, break down in much greater depth on Thursday. But the Panthers go from a 1.5-point favorite. All of a sudden now they are listed as a 2.5-point dog against the Saints, depending on where you look. And is this a question of the Saints finally rallying and put together an effort and a chance to buy low on the Panthers, potentially, who know their season hangs in the balance?
Yeah, this is kind of a tricky situation because if you look at last week's line and basically where New Orleans was in the stock market, that is the NFL betting market, it was extremely low on New Orleans. So is this an overreaction, or is this placing them kind of where we think they should be? And that's going to be the key gauge here in this game. Obviously, Panthers, as you alluded to, were -1.5 on the look ahead, now +2.5. I think we'll probably see some professionals come in here if the 3 does pop and look towards the Panthers. But for me right now at this current number, this is where this line probably should have been. New Orleans isn't as bad as that number at home indicated last night. This is probably the right number where it is right now.
And we actually talked off-air, I know we didn't address it on the podcast, about how the Saints offered a unique betting opportunity, not only for Sunday night, but also in the futures market. And we've seen that respond. The Saints were 40-1 to win the Super Bowl going into the Sunday night game, now down to 20-1, and appear to have an inside track to get that automatic berth, so to speak, for winning the NFC South and a chance for a playoff home game. So I think it always begs the question of looking for opportunity. I guess the next game in the rotation, when we look at Sunday's schedule, the team right in your backyard, Chargers and the Dolphins, initially a pick 'em. We saw the Chargers struggle a little bit in Denver. That game has since moved out to, let's call it 1.5 as a consensus right now. We did see it get as high as 2.5 earlier on Monday before there was some resistance and money that came in on the Chargers.
Yeah, I think it was probably a little phony money early on Miami. We saw some resistance at 2.5 where you know, you could buy the Chargers to that key number of 3, and I think that's what some professionals did. Miami, obviously, not a very good performance. In my opinion, probably their worst performance of the entire year at Jacksonville, despite the win. San Diego with the extra time to prepare, and when you talk about matchups in this game, Miami has some issues covering over the middle, the short passing game, which San Diego seems to perfect at this point. So probably a little tough matchup there, and I think San Diego will probably be the side the professionals look to come Sunday.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a real interesting game to see how it kind of unfolds. You almost have to think that the luster has worn off the Chargers after how quickly they got out of the gates and maybe now creating a little bit of value in this particular spot. Of course, Jacksonville, we talked about them and how poor they looked. However, some books opened them at 13. That number didn't last long, down to 11.5, but we've already talked way too much about the Jacksonville Jaguars for a Monday podcast. Eagles-Texans, want to talk a little bit about this game. We saw look-ahead number have this one set as pick. Houston now a 2.5-point underdog in this particular spot. The Eagles in an unenviable spot of playing back-to-back road games outside the division.
Yeah, I mean, Philadelphia, if you really look at that game yesterday, dominated. They literally were up and down the field, but they continue to struggle in the red zone, one of the league's worst. So Chip Kelly has to get that issue resolved. That's really where this offense is struggling. When you talk about this Houston team, one of the phoniest teams in the NFL, it really is. And aside from Philadelphia's two brain farts, that defense played extremely well aside from two plays yesterday. And I think that's what we're going to see. I think this Philadelphia line continues to climb. Would not shock me if this game closes at that key number. I think Philadelphia's the side.
Yeah, it definitely makes a ton of sense in that particular spot. We did talk about the Jets earlier. Just for some perspective, look-ahead line on the Jets, Chiefs, Kansas City, -5.5. And as we said, the market has ballooned to 10. The question becomes, who has that iron stomach to back the Jets? Inevitably, there will be some sharp money there. Two games that I want to hit on before we talk about the Monday Nighter. Broncos-Patriots. Broncos a 3-point favorite here. No change from the look-ahead number. Maybe a little bit of juice attached. And then Ravens-Steelers. The Steelers a 1-point favorite. But we'll talk about that game and why it's so intriguing to me in just a second.
Yeah, I think when you talk about the Denver-New England game, seems everyone's back on the New England bandwagon. Everyone was ready to sell them early in the season. But the offense is starting to come together. Brandon LaFell getting acclimated to his new quarterback, to the new system. He's able to play outside. And right now, the big key here is Rob Gronkowski looking like he's finally healthy. Earlier in the year, this guy could not cut. Teams were forcing him early in his route to cut, and he just couldn't do it on his knee. So that's a big bonus to this team. Defensively, they're still a little banged up. No Chandler Jones, no O.J. Mayo. I think this is probably a good time to sell New England. I'm surprised that this is just -3. I think Denver will have some success here on offense. And when you look at this number, open 54, it seems to be another primetime game where professionals are getting out ahead of the number, going over 54. It's going to leave them with a lot of options late if they want to keep the best of the number or come back and try a middle, just like we saw in that Sunday night game with Green Bay and the Saints where it opened 52. Quick number grab, got to as high as 56 in that range, and we saw some buyback right before kick.
Yeah, you are seeing 55.5. Yeah, actually, a couple prominent offshore books right now, and of course, throughout Vegas at a lot of the more recreational shops, 55.5 is the consensus. And then, of course, the aforementioned Ravens-Steelers game. I think this number probably a more accurate reflection of these teams. But the Steelers a 1-point favorite here. Mind you, they were a 5-point underdog against the Colts when that number closed. Is there any sharp guy in the world who has the Colts 6 points better on their power numbers than the Baltimore Ravens?
I'm going to say this pretty confidently. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. This is a tough number. We saw some resistance right before we hopped here on the podcast, got to 1.5. We did see some Baltimore money enter the market, and you're now looking at some picks out there at the LVH, Westgate, and at Chris. So we have seen some early money come in on Baltimore.
Yeah, it should be interesting to watch some of the movement there. Obviously, don't think we're going to talk about getting into the key number territory, but some money lines that may shift. And then the Monday Nighter didn't see a whole lot of adjustment to the Colts' power number, if anything. They went from a 3.5-point favorite now to 3, have to lay upwards of -30 in some shops, but we'll cover that game in much greater detail this time next week. And Payne, always the fun time of the show where we get to break down a Monday Night Football game, where I can categorically say I have absolutely no idea what may unfold tonight in Jerry's world. But for argument's sake, Dallas, a 9-point favorite, a soft 9 some spots, 9.5 others. Total here sits at 48.5, 49, 50, anywhere under the sun. What are your initial thoughts on this game as Colt McCoy will be the pivot under center for the Washington Redskins?
This is really a tough game for me to navigate through when you talk about this series in general dominated by the dog. You go back to 1998, the underdog is covered 75% of the time. You're talking over 30 matchups. Obviously, you know, coaches are different, but this is still a rivalry game. Teams know each other pretty well. And I think as you're watching this at home on Monday night, the key to this game is third downs. Can their Redskins keep it competitive on that third down? We talk about the Cowboys in the past few podcasts, number one in the NFL converting third downs nearly 58% of the time. On the other end of the spectrum is the Redskins and 30th in the NFL converting less than 32%. So that's the key thing to look at here, third down. And then the biggest question mark for me is Gruden going to continue to be stubborn? We've seen him with a backup quarterback for a majority of the season, and now you're talking a third stringer, as you alluded to, in Colt. And Gruden's passed the ball 61% of the time. So that's really, really crazy to me. He's got to get Alfred Morris involved in this game. He's got to get Roy Helu acclimated early in this game. And I think we've talked about this, Dallas's defense starting to regress to where we thought they were. And when you break down the film, last 3 weeks, 29th in the NFL at stopping the run at 4.8 yards per carry. So if Washington has a chance in this game, Gruden's got to shed his stripes and start running the ball in this game. And I think if he does, it's probably a good spot for an under if you can get 49.5 as well.
That's what I was going to ask when you talk about the total in this particular game. We know the narrative all season long has been primetime overs, just bet them blind. You'll have a chance to cash tickets. I believe at last count we're talking about a 20-4 record. Of course, a bookmaker's worst nightmare here. But as this number gets into that, you know, 49.5 range, 50 range, you talk about the Skins potentially staying committed to the ground game and maybe making a compelling case for this one to come in under the total.
Yeah, that's got to be the key, is Gruden going to run the ball? And if he does, this has got a good shot at going under. The lone question mark here is, how bad is this Redskins defense? And I know a lot of people get caught up with looking at teams from an overall landscape. And when you look at this Washington team, you might say, oh, this is a defense that's in the middle of the pack. But reality is, it's a very, very bad defense. Early in the season, they faced Fitzpatrick week one, I believe Henny in week two, and those numbers got skewed because they had 10 sacks. And then last week, you face Whitehurst. When you talk about teams with an offensive pulse, Philadelphia, New York, Seattle, even Arizona, in those four key games, they've allowed 35 points on average. So that's what makes it tough to go under in this game. But I think if Washington's able to run the ball, establish the run, we know Scott Linehan and this Dallas offense wants to establish the run. If both teams do that, I think it's a great recipe for the under.
Yeah, the more you keep talking about this game, the more I may be inclined to get involved on the Redskins if I can get a 10 in my back pocket, but I'd probably have to shop here locally, so we'll have to see. Payne, before we part ways until Thursday, any final parting shots as far as games that our loyal listeners should be looking to jump on early to lock in the best of the number that we may not have touched on already on the podcast?
You know, as we continue talking, we're seeing San Diego take some money. That line is now out to 1, Miami minus 1. I think you'll see San Diego close a small favorite there.
Yeah, I would be inclined to agree in that particular spot. I think that makes a lot of sense. Be interesting, as we talked about, to watch this Jets and Kansas City line move. If it continues to trend down, there's going to be value. It's a question of who's got the stomach to try and back the Jets here. And like you mentioned earlier, I think if you like the Denver Broncos in that primetime game, which is sure to get plenty of volume, you may be best served to bet them now. Lay the 3 minus $1.15, $1.17, that's widely available, because I think that game ends up closing 3.5. But for Payne Insider of PayneInsider.com, you remember you can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. Follow me on Twitter at that same name, or check out some of my fine or not so fine work, depending on your level of expectation, at toddstake.com. And until Thursday, best of luck on all your Monday Night Football selections, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.